ways, is a testimony to Charles Koch. He is an engineer who looked at American politics and thought, how do you manufacture change here? What widgets does it need? What do you do? And he's been a terrifically successful businessman, and he's brought the country far in the direction that was considered fringe not that many years ago.
And some of the most surprising participants in the group that you didn't expect would be in the group?
Well, I think it's interesting that these New York finance people are in it, because for the most part, they don't share this radical worldview. They just care about wealth accumulation, basically. And you know, I mean, David Koch's involvement himself in this. I mean, he's the wealthiest resident of Manhattan. His name is on every cultural institution here. He travels in circles that are full of open-minded people. Yet he's backing this machine that's pushing the country in a direction that I think many Manhattanites might be surprised at.
Jane Mayer, thanks so much for being with us. Author of the new book, Dark Money, The Hidden History of the Billionaires Behind the Rise of the Radical Right. That does it for our broadcast. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Our website is democracynow.org. We're hiring a director of finance and operations as well as a development director. Check democracynow.org. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, we'll talk about the Al-Qaeda invasion of the Malheur Wildlife Refuge near Burns, and we'll invite your calls at 503-231-8187. You are listening to KBOO Portland. First, some announcements.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 33rd Real Music Festival running through February 8th. Real Music explores the lively interplay between sound and image and music and culture. Friday, January 22nd, Lee Scratch Perry, Visions of Paradise will be shown. Filmed over 15 years, this film has been described as a fairy tale documentary, an almost impossible to believe portrait of the prophet of the International Rastafari movement, one of the icons of the Black Power movement, and arguably the inventor of Jamaican music as we know it. That's January 22nd at 7 p.m. at the Northwest Film Center in the Witzel Auditorium at 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information of the films and more can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hey there, my name is Alan Montecilio. On Friday, January 22nd at 11 a.m., you'll hear the first episode of a new show here on KBOO. It's called Pacific Underground. It's a show that'll focus on the stories of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders right here in Oregon. We'll bring you everything from narrative documentaries to audio essays to performances to interviews with writers and artists. In the end, this show is about handing the mic to Asians and Pacific Islanders from our local communities, like Christopher Rose, a poet who teaches at Portland Community College.
Birth name is Christopher Lee Rose. From what she told me recently, she wanted it to be Christopher Brugada Rose, which Brugada is her family's name. And my dad was like, no, they're American.
On this show, you'll hear Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders loud and clear on the airwaves. Tune in on Friday, January 22nd at 11 a.m. right here on KBOO.
A young cowboy named Billy Joe grew restless on the farm. A boy filled with wanderlust who really meant no harm. He changed his clothes and shined his boots and combed his dark hair down. And his mother cried as he walked out, "Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town." He laughed and kissed his mom and said, "You're Billy Joe's a man. I can shoot as quick and straight as anybody can. But I wouldn't shoot without a cause. I'd gun nobody down." But she cried again as he rolled away, "Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. don't take your guns to town. He sang a song as on he rode, his guns hung at his hips. He rode into a cattle town, a smile upon his lips. He stopped and walked into a bar and laid his money down. But his mother's words echoed again, don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town. He drank his first strong liquor then to calm his shaking hand, and tried to tell himself at last he had become a man. A dusty cowpoke at his side began to laugh him down, and he heard again his mother's words, don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town. Filled with rage, then Billy Joe reached for his gun to draw. But the stranger drew his gun and fired before he even saw. As Billy Joe fell to the floor, the crowd all gathered round and wondered at his final words. Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town.
Mic on? There we go. Good morning, everybody. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm Paul Roland. And of course, that was Johnny Cash. I just couldn't resist opening with that song, talking about this increasingly bewildering, disquieting, somewhat surreal, dangerous situation out in Burns, Oregon, the Maui Hoor Wildlife Refuge. And as a Kathleen Stevenson, our morning public affairs director, said maybe that song should have been Don't Take Your Stolen Government Vehicle to Town. Anyway, thanks, Kathleen, for that line. So to talk about this issue, I've got a couple guests who were at a very powerful rally at over in the Lloyd District, was in the Holiday Park yesterday, very rainy noontime. And I've got Linda Neal. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning.
And Bob Salinger.
Good morning.
And so Linda, I've known for many years before I left for Italy, which many of you don't know, but anyway, it was a long time ago, as a environmental activist and as a co-founder of the Earth and Spirit Council here in Portland. And I didn't know that you're from a old homesteading family from Harney County, which I mistakenly said was a ranching family, and there's actually a big difference.
There is a big difference. I don't want any of my ranching friends in Harney County to hear that I'm identified as a rancher, because I'm not.
And we'll talk about that. That's one of the main reasons. You gave a very very interesting and powerful talk about, you know, your experiences having that connection, your knowledge of the community out there, and just the divisions that this has opened up. And Bob Salinger with Portland Audubon, and of course Audubon has a long history with the Maui Hoor Wildlife Refuge, and you gave a powerful vision statement about some of the collaborative efforts to protect that area yesterday.
Right. You know, our history goes back to the founding of Maui Hoor. We were actually founded in 1902 in part to establish the Maui Hoor National Wildlife Refuge, which did occur in 1908. So really, our history is intertwined with Maui Hoor for over a century.
So, yeah, I'll have some questions ask you about that, too. And, of course, the number to call in, let us give us a few minutes to kind of get the conversation started. But the number is always 503-231-8187. And so I found talked to you guys after that rally yesterday and asked you to be on this show. Obviously, this is an issue that it's kind of paradoxical, because in a way it's you know, it's getting too much media attention because, you know, in some ways they're, these people don't necessarily really merit this much media attention. At the same time, it's, it brings up some really crucial issues, that long simmering issues that need to be addressed. So it's kind of a paradoxical sort of thing. So we're going to go into all those aspects and more, and hopefully engage our listeners with a really interesting conversation. So what, first, Bob, just tell us how this rally came together.
Sure. There were a lot of folks out there that were very concerned about what's happening at Malheur, the armed illegal occupation, which is now, I believe, 19 days old, 20 days old. A lot of energy out there. People care passionately about this place and care passionately about public lands. And seeing those under attack was very, very troubling to a lot of people. So we were hearing from folks, other organizations were hearing from folks that wanted to get out there and express their support for Malheur, their support for public lands, and also their support for the federal employees that work on those lands. And so it came about very organically. There was a phone call about 8-10 days ago. A ton of groups on the call that were interested. Basically, the word went out there was going to be a phone call about having rallies. We got together. We came up with some basic guidelines and some basic themes that we wanted to get across. And then different groups took on rallies in different towns across the Pacific Northwest. So they were in Portland, Salem, Eugene, Seattle. There was one in Boise, Bend, all over the place. And again, different groups put them together, worked together collaboratively, and put together the speaker lists. And they came off really well. I mean, we had 400 to 500 people in Portland yesterday, 100 plus people in Seattle, really just tons of people turning out. And I think it shows how much the public cares about these places.
And also probably a certain level of frustration that people haven't been able to express themselves. Well, these people go, you know, like you said, 19 days coming and going and picking up food and getting supply resupplied and having the power still on and all these things that seems very strange. And, you know, one of the aspects that, of course, a lot of people talk about, we've talked about on KBOO, is the, you know, the differential treatment of these particular occupiers as opposed to protesters of other racial, religious, ethnic identities, which is really quite stark. And, of course, you know, there's been endless analysis. You know, they don't want another Waco, another Ruby Ridge. It's bringing up a lot of stuff. So Linda, again, you gave a really interesting talk. Talk about your family history in Harney County and why you feel so passionate about this.
Well, my family, my great-grandfather and great-uncle homesteaded in Harney County out near Princeton, which is about 20 miles from Refuge headquarters, at the beginning of the 20th century. They were sort of the last wave of homesteaders that came out. And so my grandmother went to a little one-room school out there, and she was part of something called the Sagebrush Orchestra, which later became the Portland Youth Philharmonic. And I've been involved with the Harney County Arts and Education Foundation out there in helping potentially build a performing arts center. My stepfather, David Marshall, was the wildlife biologist under John Scharf, and that John Scharf's, that's what the bird festival is named after him. And David, my stepfather, did a lot of writing about his time on the refuge. And right now they named the pond that's out there in front of the refuge headquarters after him. So it's Marshall Pond. I go out there a lot. Also, we restored my family's homestead back in about 2000. And so we've been living out there, about a third of the time, I would say. Even over Thanksgiving, when it was 17 degrees below zero, we were out there. And I have, you know, deep connections and deep caring for the people of Harney County. And I that's one of the big concerns, I think almost the biggest concern that I have, is that this occupation and the issues that it's that have arisen from it are kind of dividing the people out there. I mean, there's a huge majority of people that just want the occupiers to leave. And there are some people that are grateful that some of these issues have come up. And I mean, I was in Arizona on my husband's reservation when this first came out, and I first knew about it by picking up a copy of USA Today and seeing Malheur Wildlife Refuge on the cover of USA Today. It was a little startling. But the fact is, I am grateful. There's some good things that are happening as a result of this, including increased attention to the Burns Paiute tribe out there. And, there's actually many good things that are happening. We're looking forward to Bundy and crew being gone, so we can actually start working on those things.
So they've kind of maybe sort of raised this, this long simmering sort of thing to kind of the surface where maybe it can be potentially looked at.
Absolutely. That's and there's quite a few people down there. I want to just mention the High Desert, what's it called?
Partnership.
High Desert Partnership, right. High Desert Partnership, a good friend of mine, Gary and Georgia Marshall, helped begin that down there, and that's a forum for bringing together different stakeholders from very different perspectives around a given issue, and they helped to create the 15-year refuge plan that's now being supported by just about everybody.
Mm-hmm. So you were just hearing the voice of Linda Neal, again, originally from a family from Harney County, and Bob Salinger with Portland Audubon. And you mentioned, it's basically the time you're talking about, the early 20th century is when Malheur was created, when your family arrived. It seems like a perfect pair of people to talk about this issue. So was Audubon himself out there?
No, John James Audubon was not. But we were formed in 1902, and our first president and founder, William Finley, was a great Northwest naturalist, great wildlife photographer. And he went out to Malheur with his partner, Henry Bowman, and took amazing pictures of the wildlife that was there. In fact, we have this great picture of them traveling across the sagebrush in this old jalopy. And the caption written by Finley on it was, "This trip was what led to the establishment of Malheur." He sent those pictures to Teddy Roosevelt. And what those pictures showed was this incredible wildlife that's there. I mean, this is an incredible place for birds. It also showed the carnage that was going on back then. Plume hunters, folks that killed birds for their feathers and used them in the fashion industry, were killing just massive, massive numbers of birds in places like Klamath and Malheur. And so these pictures really moved Teddy Roosevelt. He met with Finley. There's a great story of him coming to Portland, and you can imagine the bandstand and all the officials waiting for him as he gets off the train. And apparently he got off the train and shouted, "Get me Finley." Went off with Finley, looked at these pictures, and in 1908, established Malheur as one of the first three wildlife refuges in the Western United States.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a... The other part, I really wanted to get one of the Burns Paiute. There's, I think, two or three of them there yesterday at the rally, and one spoke, Jarvis Kennedy, right?
Right, he's on the tribal council.
He's on the tribal council. And again, it is, that's a, some of those small, desert reservations, there's a number of them, Nevada, Oregon, Utah, that are kind of, sort of hidden, and their histories are sort of not well known. And so it's not long before the time period where you guys are talking about in terms of the establishment of the Malheur and your family, Linda, coming there, there was a really bad history in terms of the expropriation or the forcible removal of the Burns Paiute. And that's something that's really coming up, publicly for maybe like the first time in the way it is now. I mean, they're actually gaining some voice. So that's another kind of ironic effect of this issue. And so that's something I'd like to talk about. But we've had a caller waiting since early on. So let's go to that first caller. Eric, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. This is a good subject. I kind of want to think of the idea that this kind of is a privatization of the land so that the Chinese can come and invest in all of our land here in Oregon and while their stock market is crashing. There must be some kind of organization out there that's looking at this as a land grab.
This is Bob. I think a lot of folks are looking at this as a land grab. The folks that are occupying Malheur have come up with a variety of pretexts for why they're there, but the overriding theme is give the land back to private landowners. And, you know, this is a movement that's occurring in other places as well, very, very far right, radical extreme movement to eliminate our public lands, you know, which is part of the great legacy and heritage of this country, our national parks, our wilderness areas, our national forests, and our wildlife refuges. You know, this is really a heritage that belongs to us all. And I think there's a bigger context in which this has to be viewed. I mean, it's immediately a threat to Malheur, but it's also an existential threat to public lands at large. I think the good news is that people of this country overwhelmingly reject that notion. They value these lands tremendously. It's been tested in court repeatedly, and the Supreme Court has repeatedly found that the government does have the ability, the constitutional right to own these lands. I think these folks are making a lot of noise and getting a lot of attention right now. What the rallies yesterday were about were giving people the opportunity to counteract that and really speak out about how valuable and important these lands are. And I love the juxtaposition of people on that stage. We had Linda there, who was, a family that goes way back in Harney County. We had the Paiute Nation there, Jarvis Kennedy. We had Earl Blumenauer's staff, the Steelheaders, conservation groups, really, you know, across the spectrum. People care about these places and value them and came together yesterday to express that.
I'd like to say something about, the rhetoric that's coming out of from the occupiers, because they first started saying that they wanted to return the land to the original owners, who were this ranchers, the loggers, and the miners. And then the Paiutes actually had a meeting and said, hey, wait a minute, you know, we were here. And now they're saying they want to turn it to the previous owners. So, they are completely denying that the Paiutes even have a claim to that land. And they are the ones that have been there for centuries and centuries.
Looks like we have a full slate of callers. Before going to our next caller, I just want to piggyback off that. You know, this article, there's so much been coming. There's so many fascinating perspectives and really deep, well thought out perspectives that are coming out, on the internet and various publications about this. And one of them, Ryan Bundy, Native Americans have lost their claim to the land. You know, going back to the skirmish in Nevada a couple years ago, where some of the people involved in that at the Bundy Ranch drove their ATVs through some Native American, I believe, burial site, certainly a sacred area. And without any concern at all. And then I guess Ryan Bundy was quoted as saying, we also recognize that the Native Americans had the claim to the land, but they lost that claim. There are things to learn from cultures of the past, but the current culture is the most important. This whole idea, this again, that brings up some really deep stuff. You know, the whole idea that, to the victor belong the spoils. It's terrible what happened to the Native Americans, but get over it. All these, scratch the surface, and it's not just the Bundy crowd that actually thinks these things. I think it's actually more widespread than we'd actually like to believe. So maybe it's a good thing that this issue is coming up, and that, the Paiutes finally can talk about how they got, 25-acre X dump or whatever in replace of this, millions of acres of just beautiful, beautiful land where they live for for eons. But let's do go to our next caller. Camilo, you're on the air.
Good morning. I have a question about the opposition strategy, because it's clear that the law enforcement, particularly federal, are not going to do anything to recreate embarrassing situations where they really lost the public relations fight. And that is, since we cannot confront them directly, I think that we should be able to confront the attorney for the federal government in the area and at least have the attorney explain why they have not prepared indictments, why they're not going to be prosecuted under RICO. It clearly is a conspiracy. And I wonder if we could identify who that person is, where they are, and have a rally there and say, you need to come out and say, why are you not doing something about this, as you have done in other examples?
So this is Linda, and I think that I've begun to believe that there actually is a strategy that's going on, and I think that the law enforcement, I know the county commissioners and the people there that are involved in local law enforcement are trying to there's trying to have a coordinated approach, the right now, if you go down to Burns, the courthouse and the sheriff's office, there's barricades up all around it. They don't allow anybody to come and go. There is a lot of fear. There's still a lot of fear. I was thinking about that song that was played, the Johnny Cash song. You know, we don't want to have what happened in that Johnny Cash song happen down there. So I believe that there is some kind of coordinated approach that's going on. The people down there seem to believe that also. The FBI drives around in their big Suburbans and, just like out of the movies, sunglasses and whatever. But they've taken over the airport. So I think that there is some kind of coordinated approach. And I'm beginning to, this is just me personally, I'm beginning to feel like there is some wisdom in going slow like this. I don't think it can go on forever, however.
Yeah, if I could jump in too. We certainly feel that frustration, and we hear from many, many people that feel that frustration. And I think part of that is driven by a lack of information. I do wish the federal government would do a much better job of communicating with the public about what's going on, and the communication strategy, in my opinion, has been very, very lacking. Even if they get up daily and tell you that they can't talk about what's going on, at least to see them and have a chance to ask some questions would be helpful. It's also very frustrating that the Bundys were not prosecuted for their previous crimes. They've run their cattle on public lands, run up bills of over $1 million over the course of 20 years, refused to pay those. And when the government tried to collect, they had an armed standoff, and some of those folks bragged about having federal agents in their sniper sights. And they weren't prosecuted. And I think that has emboldened them to do what they're doing now at Malheur. At the same time, we want to be respectful of the federal strategy. We don't want a violent end to this. I think the fact that the community is speaking out so strongly against them, there was a meeting last night where the community spoke very, very powerfully about not wanting these folks there, regardless of issues, that they don't belong there, that what they're doing is illegal and divisive. And so, I would preach a little bit of patience. At the same time, we want this to end. We want it to end expeditiously, and we absolutely want to see these guys prosecuted to the full extent of the law. They should not be allowed to get away with this. There should be no deals cut where they get to walk free because they leave. They went in there with guns. It's an armed occupation. They have made threats. They have intimidated people. They have destroyed public property. They've destroyed wildlife habitat. They've broken into government records. That should lead to very long jail sentences.
And the people are, some people have been followed. People's tires have been slashed. you know, there's a lot of tension. I think people are, the local people are, in fact, there was a statement released this morning, I believe, from the staff of the refuge, which I was happy to see, and that it ended by, their statement ended up by saying, "We are Harney County."
Well, I'm glad to hear that there is a strategy, and I agree it's wise to be patient, but I think the time should come when, if we don't see that prosecution is going forward, that we need to challenge the law enforcement on that.
I would encourage people to make that statement right now, really. And the way to do that is to contact your elected officials, contact the Oregon delegation or wherever you are, and ask our elected officials to speak out on behalf of Malheur and the illegal occupation and what they think about that, to speak out on the value of public lands, and to demand real prosecution on this thing. I think that can happen right now. I also think writing letters to the editor, writing op-eds, coming out to rallies, that kind of stuff is really important. It's very important right now that everybody sees how important these lands are to the public.
You know, thank you, Camilo. Got a couple other callers. Hold off just a couple seconds here. There's so many ironies and paradoxes in this. One of them, you know, as someone who, you know, was it pretty heavily involved in the forest or timber wars of the 80s, 90s, you know, we certainly never saw the federal government as on our side. In fact, their land management policies were exactly the reason why we were risking arrest and climbing trees and, you know, being in front of bulldozers and all that stuff that really got the issue on the map. And of course, you know, the allowing of rampant cattle grazing in the West, leading to massive, increased desertification, despoiling of the water, decline of the salmon, are all issues that certainly haven't gone away. So it's kind of ironic that, you know, people are calling, you know, for the federal government, you know, in this case, rightfully so, who else is going to do it? But I would like to point out the irony in the situation, you know, and also, you know, one thing that I've been thinking about a lot is, you know, back in the, you know, you mentioned the Sagebrush Orchestra or whatever, you know, the Sagebrush Rebellion is kind of, in some ways, what kicked a lot of this madness off back in 1979, idea that the federal land should go back to the counties or private ownership, and people should be free to do whatever they want, and all that. And there's, you know, a fair amount of corporate involvement because there's a lot of resources to be still extracted if they are allowed from these federal lands. And so at the same time as, you know, Earth First, which I was involved in, was fighting against the Forest Service and the BLM on various issues, that they were being squeezed from the other side, you know, and being, you know, physically threatened and intimidated in various places around the West. So I really hadn't really come to grips with that reality, that being a federal land manager at that time must have been a very difficult thing.
Well, I think there's a difference though here. And I think, you know, we're very supportive of nonviolent political protest. That's an important part of the tradition of this country. And that is very different than what's going on here. This is a violent takeover. You know, they haven't hurt anybody yet, but they have certainly threatened to do that. The same people have bragged about, you know, having federal agents in their sniper sites. That is absolutely unacceptable. They're going in and destroying public property, destroying wildlife habitat. This is a very, very different thing than a nonviolent political protest and nonviolent civil disobedience. And I think, you know, whether you're on the left or the right, when you go in and you start practicing violence, when you start practicing terrorism, that becomes unacceptable. And it is appropriate to ask the government to step in. I don't think anybody in the environmental community is saying we agree with the government all the time. We don't. We disagree with them often. Making threats against federal agents, though, is absolutely unacceptable. Find a nonviolent way to make your point. Be part of the political tradition of this country. Don't go in there with guns.
Let's go to our next caller. Sean, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning. Well, listen, I just wanted to say that Bob answered a lot. Mr. Salinger asked a lot of what I was calling about, and that was I think the biggest thing, what has really been curious about this is, number one, is the silence of the federal government. And I think it has to do with a real, what I believe is a historically incestuous relationship with the kind of people that the Bundys are and the Hammonds. And what I mean is I've found it really more than ironic, if you want to use the word, that the Bundys owe over $1 million in grazing fees and penalties, but the government has not forced them to pay that. Now, if that was you and I, you can bet the IRS would be breathing down our necks. But also that the Hammonds, at least 20 years ago, literally have made death threats and threats of injury against Ranger's own families. The government initially simply placed misdemeanor charges, which were then dropped, for death threats against federal employees. So they have basically been allowed, and as he said, you know, what kind of message is that sent across to them and to anybody else? And I think part of the relationship, too, is that, excuse me, is that I think there's something to be said about how there is a history of militias have actually helped the federal government put down leftist uprisings in the past, and that a lot of this has to do with private property rights, the right to bear arms, and also, as you mentioned earlier, comments about American exceptionalism and how the federal government was kind of founded on those things. So I think there's kind of a real twisted relationship in all of this.
So I this is Linda, and I just wanted to tell you that there are a lot of people in Harney County that would disagree with you, that there is an incestuous relationship between the federal government and private property people, no matter who they are. If that's what you were implying, you know, there's a lot of tension. There has been a lot of tension between the ranchers and it's gotten a lot better in the last 20 years. It's gotten a lot better. But there were, and I appreciate what Bob was saying about communication, because there was a time where there was not very much communication between the range officers and the federal government, and it was very, very confrontive, and it has gotten a lot better. But people still remember that. People still remember it.
Yeah. Well, let me shift to something positive here, though, because, you know, I think it's easy to get into a lot of theories about why what's happening is happening, and there's a lot that's invisible to all of us right now. One thing I really want to capture while we have some time, though, is the progress that Linda's talking about, because Harney County right now is being exploited for these historic divisions. These folks have come in from out of state and tried to exploit historic divisions. They've been looking desperately for a wedge, whether it was the Hammonds, whether it's public lands. You know, Paul talked earlier about this. No one should also forget that there are also real connections to the white supremacist movement among these individuals as well. These are really, really divisive folks. And that's what they're trying to sow, is division. But Harney County and Malheur in particular ought to be known for something different. And that's actually some incredible collaboration and consensus that's been established. Every refuge in the United States has to do a long-term strategic plan. Most of them do a very cursory process. Malheur was the lone exception. They agreed at the request of ranchers and environmentalists and county commissioners that came together several years ago, the High Desert Partnership, to do a collaborative consensus-based process. And for 3 years, ranchers, county commissioners, the Paiutes, conservation groups went over at Harney County, those of us who lived outside of it, over and over and over again, and met in town, worked through issues. We don't agree on everything, but we actually achieved a true consensus about the refuge and how it goes forward. And in my opinion, it's one of the most important projects in the Western United States from an ecological perspective. It's also one of the most important projects from a collaborative perspective, because we've been working together even after the government adopted the plan. We stayed together. We continue to meet. We continue to write grants together, do projects together, on and off the refuge. And so there's some incredible collaboration going on there.
I'll be done my last remark. And that is, I agree with, I think the consensus is a fantastic historical landmark in that regard. And to I'm sorry, the other gal, the guest, is
Linda.
I'm sorry, Linda. And that is, I'm not specifically targeting Harney County or saying a broad spectrum. I am really more talking about the Bundys and the Hammonds and the like, and also this whole issue of like what they did to the Shoshone land in Nevada by, you know, dishonoring it, let's put it that way. And that is that I think that they, specifically, folks like them, do, you know, if you go back into the historical record, they do reflect, you know, the people who, let's say, founded this country in terms of what they wanted based upon over subduing the Indians, private property, the right to bear arms, and the way that they viewed white supremacy as manifest destiny. And so I'm not talking Harney County or just in general, but specifically these kind of folks do represent a lot of what this country was founded on. And I think that there's a very uncomfortable energy that resides there, which is part of the reason why I believe the federal government has also not brought charges, is because, to a degree, they understand and relate to that very thing. So that's my comment, but thanks.
Well, I think what you're saying may have some validity in some places, but I think it's a very general statement too. There are certainly very troubling strains that go back throughout our history and are still current today, and there's no question about that. And I think we should continue to put pressure on the government to prosecute these things and take them very seriously, and I think we're all trying to do that right now. I do think, though, that I want to spend some time on that collaboration, though, because I think that's how we're going to go forward from here. And I want to really call out the fact that Harney County has rejected these folks. Now, there are some folks that are saying, look, we agree with some of their issues, but they have resoundingly said, this illegal occupation is not okay. And so, you know, I think that's the most powerful image of all. If these folks leave Harney County because they were rejected by the local community, these tactics are not acceptable and you need to leave. I think the term last night was get the hell out. That's going to be the most powerful repudiation of much of what you're talking about. And then we're going to get back to having the dialogue that was already ongoing and is ongoing right now, even though this occupation is occurring, about how we move forward together. And that includes the ranchers and the Paiutes and the conservation groups and the federal lands. And we will disagree and there will be lawsuits, but we're going to do it civilly. We're going to do it respectfully. And I think we're going to make some real progress. And maybe this is going to be a catalyst for some of that because a lot of people weren't paying attention to the good stuff that was going on out there. It wasn't being nurtured. Maybe now people are going to realize how important that is. And I hope we get to exactly the kinds of historic issues and current issues that you're talking about. It was really powerful and really important yesterday that the Paiutes came across the state to talk at this rally in Portland and to be part of that discussion yesterday. And it's really important that they were part of the discussions about the refuge long-term management plan. And that they have spoken out and said, you know, we value this refuge. It's the federal government that's protecting our artifacts now. And to point out that they were the original owners of this land. And if there's inequity here, they are the ones that have suffered it clearly.
And they still consider themselves to be the custodians of that land. It doesn't matter who's sitting on it. You know, their ancestors are buried there. There's much that they have. And I just wanted to say that I totally agree with Bob. You know, this country was founded on many principles and many ideals, and one of those has to do with listening to a lot of voices. And you can debate that, I know, but at least that's where we are now.
Okay, and you're listening to Cable Community Radio. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm Paul Rowland. Here every Wednesday morning from 8 to 9. And of course, you can hear talk radio every weekday morning from 8 to 9 with a variety of interesting perspectives, hosts, guests. And I urge you to check all of them out. And we are talking about the Malheur crisis. And I actually had titled this, What's at Stake? And so we've actually gotten into that a fair amount. I hope in the last 15 minutes we can touch on a few other points. As usual, time is running out. The number is 503-231-8255. 8187 if you want to get in. Better do it right now. Don't call with 5 minutes to go, please. Let's hear from Johnny.
Hey, how's it going? Johnny here. So, first of all, I'd like to give a big shout-out to you, Paul, and the guests, and all of the KU staff and volunteers, and all of the good peoples down there in Harney County and throughout the rest of Oregon for keeping a watchful eye on our wildlife refuges. I grew up in Klamath Falls. I'm in Portland right now. Of course, I fell in love with Portland. I've been here for 24 years, but I've seen stuff like this, you know, kind of growing up throughout my childhood, you know, like different peoples making different demands. And of course, I think we're all familiar with the Klamath and Modoc reservations and the stronghold, the Captain Jack stronghold down there. However, what I would really like to bring into position here is the direct inconsistencies in the federal governments and the militia themselves, and how odd their behavior is, and just how uniquely unprecedented it seems like they are floating around on these whimsical ideas of why they're there, and the feds are kind of whimsically just there too. So I'd also like to point out in America's past, within the branch of the United States corporate's office, I guess you could say, has the entity of corporation. There's a long-standing history of natural and man-made disasters that coincide with the structure of corporations getting copyrights over land rights and over water rights, or trying to at least, for 50 some odd years. And so my question to the visitors today, Paul, is that what's the likelihood that this is like an organized distraction, like an elaborate organized distraction to keep us from looking at really, really, not to say that Harney County and the folks down there and their land and the culture of the Paiute tribe that are from there isn't important, but there are other important things that are going on today too, like the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And what's the likelihood of this being, you know, like a big distraction, and they are just pulling as many strings as they can and getting as many people in an uproar as possible? What's the likelihood of that?
I'm not sure who you're referring to as they, but I...
The government and the militia together, because you have, obviously, there's out-of-staters there that have no stake, really, except for their ego, you know, and so...
Well,
like,
they have a belief system, and I think that's one of the things that hasn't been in the press very much, is the belief system of the Bundys, et cetera, that, and the... You know, it comes from a religious belief. Eamon Bundy has said that God told him to go in there and do this. So we have to... yeah, right. Anyway, so I think that it's... My own opinion is that it's pretty unlikely. You can say, you know, Bob can say what he thinks. I think this is just more of the same from this group of people.
Ego.
Okay, I think it's hard to imagine that this is really a well thought out conspiracy, because if it is, it's pretty poorly planned. And I think these guys are in some ways the best example of how asinine this is. They're not good spokespeople for the issues that they're trying to raise. They're going out and cutting down fences that the ranchers are putting back up. They're being told by the community to leave. They're just making asses out of themselves. And they are a distraction, absolutely, but the world keeps turning and people are still working on other issues that are important. So I don't see a fall off in terms of people focusing on other really important issues because we're all focused on Harney County. For those of us that work on public lands and who care about public lands and who care about Malheur, we're absolutely diverting resources to this. But those other issues are getting addressed as well. And, you know, I think in the end, these folks are going to leave. It may take some time, but they're going to leave. They're going to be rejected by pretty much everybody across the spectrum. And we're going to move forward. We're going to be stronger when we do.
Okay, I just want to jump in. You mentioned other issues, and thank you for your call. I mean, that's something I've heard other people talk about, and it's good to get it out there. I mean, in the end, who knows? Maybe it'll all come out that, you know, there was secret funding from the Koch brothers for this, or who knows? You know, it's all possible. But their actions do seem to not be the most clearly thought out. I guess the only thing I would say is that, you know, if there is sort of a quote conspiracy or something, it's almost like it's eerily ironic that it is precisely in a moment where there does seem to be better relations between the various parties that they've come in to be divisive. So maybe they did know about that. Maybe it rankled with them that, you know, who knows?
They seem shockingly unaware of their surroundings. I mean, this is all a grand facade, but. But at the end of the day, you know, they were talking originally about giving the trees back to the timber industry.
Right.
They didn't seem to realize that Malheur doesn't have a whole lot of trees. that's the Malheur National Forest, which is somewhere else. I think these guys picked a target of opportunity. That's my take. I mean, no one knows. We'll find out if there's big money behind them or what else is going on. I think certainly there are people that are using the Bundys as an opportunity to push a bigger agenda, and there is some synchronicity there. Certainly, the Bundy standoff a year ago has been lashed on to by some extremist groups as well. I think the way we're going to fight that is by organizing and standing up for our public lands and letting people know how important they are. We want them taken care of. We want them protected for the public. We want them managed well. And we don't want them turned over to private interests or the extraction industries.
Okay. What I was getting at was there are some other issues that I had meant to mention at the outset, which I will do now since we only have a few minutes left. So this evening, a really important event at the 18th Avenue Peace House, 2116 Northeast 18th Avenue. There's a report back from the climate talks in Paris. And it's at 7 o'clock. And there will be Jill Stein, Green Party presidential candidate, Marlena Murphy of Portland Rising Tide, Terry Light of Right to Survive, and Virginia Wiseman, who reports on environmental negotiations and conferences with the International Institute for Sustainable Development's Earth Negotiations Bulletin, co-hosted by Portland Central America Solidarity Committee, Right to Survive, and 350 PDX. So that's this evening at the 18th Avenue Peace House, 2116 Northeast 18th Avenue. Tomorrow, an important hearing with the Multnomah County Commission, who is going to be introducing a resolution, or the Commissioner Jules Bailey, opposing oil trains next week. And people are being asked to come to a hearing tomorrow, the morning of January 21st. And of course, that's at the Multnomah County Building, 501 Southeast Hawthorne. That's Thursday, January 21, 9:30 a.m. The meeting begins. And you can testify. You can also email your county chair or other commissioners. And I will put that up on the page for this program afterwards. You can also look up that information. It is public. Also, this Saturday, January 30th, or maybe that's next Saturday. Never mind. I'll talk about that next week. There's a Portland Tenants United open house and work party at the Lucky Labrador, Saturday, January 30, 12 to 3 p.m. I'll talk about that next week. Linda, did you want to respond to any of those calls before we go to our next caller? Let's just go to our next caller.
Yeah, let's go to the next caller.
Willow, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello. Hello, Linda.
Hi, Willow.
Hi. I've been listening to a lot of this, most of this conversation, and I thought I didn't really have anything to say, but then I thought about the time I've spent out on the homestead and out in the prairie and around the. I've been to Malheur. I've sat in the weeds and watched the birds. And I also grew up in this country in Oregon and watched things disintegrate out in the countryside. I'm going to be third generation Oregonian here, maybe fourth. And
we only have a couple minutes left.
Okay, my family were farmers, and I'm concerned about what's happening at Malheur and how that might slow down and maybe stop the beautiful things that are going on there to protect the land. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to see more positive stuff about what's going on the land and getting these guys out of there without so much time
sitting
with it.
Willow, I think that, you know, we all want to see that. I think that we all want to see that. And I think the quickest way to resolve this is what Bob has said, to really send emails, et cetera, and let our congressional delegation and every person in the government know that it's not okay that we're just sitting here twiddling our thumbs, or it feels like that sometimes. I think we need to do, I've felt a need to do something. You know, it just is, it's very frustrating for the people that live there, for the people that care about that place, to see what appears to be happening. But the other thing I would say again is that underneath that, I think that there's a lot of hope. There is a lot of hope that that good things eventually are going to come out of this, that people are going to get together, that the High Desert Partnership is going to go to work, and as Rod says, as you know, Willow, we need to learn to listen and listen to learn.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate that. I'm going to have to let you go. We're right down to the wire. Let's go to one last call real quick, Jack, if you could be extremely succinct.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if anybody there has given any thought to not entirely, but somewhat parallel event last summer, the people who illegally hung from the bridge on St. John's. Of course, they didn't threaten anybody with guns. I'm not saying it's total parallel, but they were allowed to hang there for, you know, several days without the law enforcement doing anything. And I'm just curious if this has been examined by comparison at all. That's all.
Thank you.
I think it's a good point. You know, I think peaceful, nonviolent protest, civil disobedience is part of the tradition of this country. It's a very important part of it. It's how we've made some of our most important progress forward over some of our most difficult social issues. And that needs to be allowed. This is different. This is an armed occupation, destruction of public property, intimidation, threats of violence. That's a very different thing, and it needs to be dealt with differently. And I don't think we should confuse the two. I think we need to be very clear about the difference between nonviolent civil disobedience and violent intimidation and threats.
And I can guarantee you, if that demonstration had gone on any longer, you would have seen a heavy. I mean, they were, you know, interrupting commercial traffic on the Willamette River. Mm-hmm. Can't have that. So yeah, would have seen some really, you know, much heavier force come to play. And of course, we've seen much heavier force come into play in much less grievous assaults on our institutions, if they were done by the people like African Americans, like Native Americans, the American Indian Movement, and others. We are flush out of time here. I'm just so sorry. We'd like to go on for hours and hours. I'm going to link to a lot of really interesting articles, like when the feds forcibly removed black occupiers from a wildlife refuge in Georgia in 1979. So go to my site. Any last words?
Thank you. Thank you for doing this, Paul. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you having us on as well. Thank you.
All right. Thank you all so much. And really glad to have you on. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Sorry I couldn't get all the callers on. Stay tuned for Political Perspectives here on KBOOM. More great programming and Johnny Cash.
He sang a song as on he rode, his guns hung at his hips. He rode into a cattle town, a smile upon his lips. He stopped and walked into a bar and laid his money down. But his mother's words echoed again, "Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town." He drank his first strong liquor then to calm his shaking hand, and tried to tell himself at last he had become a man. A dusty cowpoke at his side began to laugh him down, and he heard again his mother's words, "Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town."
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the We Real Cool film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month is Nacho Drum, showing Thursday, January 21st at 7 p.m. Released in 1993, Nacho Drum is a French documentary about the Romani people's journey from Northwest India to Spain, consisting primarily of music. Again, that's Nacho Drum, Thursday, January 21st, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. It's just 9 o'clock. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up, it's Political Perspectives. Today featuring an interview